and welcome to the NAREIT REIT Report podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Borkson-Quito, and today we continue to look at the impact of the coronavirus crisis on the REIT sector with Gil Menner, co-chair of the REITs and Real Estate M&A practice at Goodwin. Gil, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Sarah.
Now, as someone who has been involved with the REIT industry through a variety of business cycles, what do you see as the biggest challenges facing the industry in the wake of the current crisis?
Well, I think that real estate has, as people have been saying, Sarah, been a victim, not the cause, of the financial effects of the pandemic, and it's really all about income. The REIT sector, across all of the asset types, certainly entered this year in 2020, continuing a very positive cycle. I mean, obviously, certain sectors were having a little bit of a bumpier time than others, and things like e-commerce were affecting retail, but it's income. And you can see that in the context of all of the analysts that follow the REIT sector, focusing on who's collecting rents and who's not and why. So first and foremost, it's about income. And then secondly, one has to always focus on, you know, the credit impacts of the long-term effect of not having net income. And I think that people are focusing on liquidity. It's paramount in making sure that they can weather the storm no matter how long it lasts. And then, obviously, there are many long-term impacts on coronavirus and its impact on the real estate asset class generally in each of the sectors. But I think that certainly over the near term, as we come through this, and we will undoubtedly come through this with the help of science and our healthcare providers, I think that it'll be really interesting to focus on tenancy and leaseholds and the relationship between landlord and tenant. So that's more of a, not an immediate concern, but more of a long-term question about the value of leaseholds going forward and whether or not they'll continue to hold relative to pre-coronavirus periods.
Now, REITs have taken a number of steps on the balance sheet front to strengthen their position. Do you think what they've done should be sufficient to move beyond the immediate crisis? And what do you see happening later on?
Well, again, that's a very interesting question. I think that most all of our clients that had capacity under their credit facilities drew down on their credit facilities. Once they did that, obviously the question was whether or not in a subsequent quarter they were going to end up being in an event of default, and in some contexts they're already beginning to work out forbearance arrangements in that context. And we can come back and talk a little bit about that because I find that dynamic fascinating, because the relationship between lender and REIT and the different ways that people lend money to REITs is going to be highlighted in the context of the crisis. I'll explain that in a second. I do think that that, as I mentioned earlier, REITs were relatively strong on their balance sheet coming in, and I don't think that, unlike what happened in the Great Financial Crisis, where we saw REITs actually having to raise equity capital in the context of the downturn, and diluting their investors over the long term because of that. I don't see that happening now. I don't think that you'll end up, if we find a vaccine relatively soon, I think that the strength of the sector as a whole, and we're going to put lodging aside for a minute and some of the other asset types, but the sector as a whole, I think, is strong enough not to have to dilute investors by raising equity capital to shore up their balance sheets. But they will have to work out matters with their lenders. On an asset type basis, so I do think that we're sufficient to move beyond the immediate crisis, depending upon how long, what we mean by immediate, I think, is the answer to that question. Lodging and retail are actually good examples of a segue into that concept of what is immediate, and what pre-coronavirus issues around asset types are impacting the way in which lenders see those balance sheets today. And what I mean by that is that we've noticed that special servicers in CMBS debt are actually being not so lenient with respect to releasing reserves for TI, for tenant improvements for retail, because I think that, and obviously strip centers seem to be faring a little bit better than malls in the coronavirus, but retail came into the coronavirus impacted by e-commerce, and now the question is whether COVID has is really the straw that broke the camel's back on retail, and what does that mean? So special services are not being at all lenient. They're generally not lenient to begin with. They are, on the other hand, in lodging, which is also being negatively impacted, in one of the asset types that is most negatively impacted by the pandemic. There, they seem to be more lenient with respect to allowing a release of furniture, fixture, and equipment, or FF&E reserves. And I think that's because pre-coronavirus, or pre the immediate crisis, retail was on its heels generally, and lodging, on a relative basis, was not. It had a bit of a downdraft in 2018, but with the employment rate where it was, with the economy doing as well as it was, no special servicer for CMBS and lodging was so concerned about the asset type. So you're seeing that play out. How that unfolds over the longer term, and whether or not, for example, lodging will come back in 2021, 2022, 2023, even to 2019 levels, will be very important, and people are making judgment calls about that.
And to what extent do you think REITs can be opportunistic in the current environment?
I think that there's lots of ways to be opportunistic. I don't think, by the way, buying shares with needed liquidity is a smart move. I'm actually not a big fan of stock buybacks generally, and neither are most analysts in this sector. In fact, I think a number of REITs that did buy back shares thinking that the NAV was public NAVs were obviously much lower than private NAVs are obviously not looking like they made good decisions with 2020 hindsight, because tail effects and black swans always happen. But normally, I'm not a big fan of stock buybacks, but they are used. I certainly would not consider that to be on the short list or even a long list of things to consider now. I think it would be about shoring up the balance sheet by working with lenders, and most importantly, working with tenants. I can't stress that enough. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I think that the landlord-tenancy relationship is going to be a very interesting dynamic going forward following coronavirus, once we actually find our way through this and we manage to a place where our economy is back on its steady footing. So I think that REITs that are focused on novel ways to deal with tenancy concerns, not just in connection with reopening, but actually sort of addressing tenancy needs that evolve from coronavirus, will be very opportunistic. A good example of that, if I could use a direct example, would be focusing on office. I think that the REIT sector has remarkable companies that focus on office, both suburban and urban, and I know that there is some concern about there being a flight to suburban living, both in terms of single-family residences and maybe even office. But either way, whether it's suburban or urban office, I think trying to attract tenants back to space, using the space in a way that's novel and useful to tenants to address their needs and their concerns, and helping them psychologically become productive again, will be an important part of the opportunity set available to REITs. And that's just not in one asset type. It's across the board.
Now, looking now at transaction activity, what had you expected for 2020 on both the M&A and IPO front, and how have those forecasts changed?
Well, there was a question. The REIT sector, as we all know, pre-coronavirus, certainly was seeing across the entire sector, NAVs trading at valuations less in the public market than they were in the private market. So we were anticipating, if that dynamic continued, the typical arbitrage play by private equity with some going private transactions. I think that's likely to be put on hold, at least in the near term. And I don't, you know, a good example of the fact that the REIT sector was in fact trading below NAV on the whole was not the case for companies like, you know, digital center companies or tower companies, maybe even life science companies that have life science real estate, and certainly not industrial, or for that matter, even single family residents. But I think that that it was the case for other asset classes, and I think the question is how quickly private equity might come back into the sector to take advantage of that spread between private valuations and public valuations. I think it's going to be harder for boards of public REITs to transact in the context of any dynamic that's not normalized with respect to coronavirus. And by that I mean trying to get back to NAV levels that are considered to be long-term. And even if they trade in the public markets at valuations less than in the private markets, I think that boards will have to be convinced that that's a dynamic that's likely to continue into the foreseeable future or near term as they were pre-coronavirus.
And do you expect any corporate governance changes to emerge in response to the crisis?
Well, I think that not in the broadest context. Obviously, there has been there's concern about activism, and obviously valuations being so depressed, people are very focused on whether or not they need to consider putting a shareholder rights plan on the shelf, and we've been focused on that with a number of public clients, regardless of whether they're in the REIT sector or not, given the downdraft. And ISS, as you know, or you probably know, came out with a piece and the impact of COVID-19 pandemic on policy guidance from their perspective in corporate governance matters, and they said that they would be willing to entertain shareholder rights plans on a case-by-case basis. Most REITs have ownership limitation provisions in their charter that serve as an anti-takeover device in a potentially coercive environment like the one we're in if companies receive an unsolicited bid. I think, though, that on a broader point, I actually feel as though from a governance standpoint, REITs were well positioned. I think they will continue to be well positioned to lead on governance, and I don't see any major impact that coronavirus would have on actual corporate governance provisions for public REITs. I think that what was happening and what was trending will continue to trend, and there won't be any major shifts in that regard.
And finally, are there any other trends or developments you'll be watching closely in the months ahead?
Right. Well, I think that one of the things that we, and this is sort of a segue from your governance point, if you consider dividend policy governance, obviously many REITs are focused on liquidity. We talked about that earlier. And I think we're going to continue to see the question will be, you know, folks that have either suspended their dividends or whether or not they have used NAREIT's movement towards getting more relief on using stock instead of cash to pay their dividends when they need to. And REITs can in fact pay up to 90% of the value of their distribution in stock. I think we'll all be watching that closely as the quarters unfold through the coronavirus, and as we hopefully find our way out of this with science and a vaccine, how long that will take. I think it's very smart for folks to preserve that liquidity. We talked about that when we talked about balance sheets earlier. And I think that the other thing I'll be watching really carefully is the impact that the pandemic has on cost reductions and improvements. A good example of that is obviously in the retail sector, particularly in the mall sector, you know, we understood and recognized that capital was very much needed to address anchor centers that were in trouble and reposition properties. And I think that, and we actually saw even some of that in other sectors, not just retail, in office with respect to using some of their capital improvements to reposition their properties to attract different types of tenancies. So I think that watching capital deployment and when people wake up and feel more wake up out of this somewhat nightmare from a financial standpoint and nightmare certainly from a human health and natural disaster standpoint, and focus on where capital is flowing in terms of improving properties, I think that will become very interesting. I think we can look to those capital flows to see actually whether or not we find ourselves back to where we were pre-coronavirus in terms of expected redeployment and repositioning of properties, or whether we find ourselves, as I had mentioned, with respect to dealing with tenancy needs in a new era, a different era, and that capital is deployed a little differently because of coronavirus. I don't know if that's helpful, but that's what I'll be watching, at least one of the things I'll be watching.
Okay, great. Gil, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Sarah. It was a pleasure.
And to our listeners, you can find more news and analysis about REITs, listed real estate, and the impact of the coronavirus crisis by visiting REIT.com.